Please be advised that discussions on this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, KVMart staff members or underwriters. And they do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff members or underwriters. Welcome to the 221st edition of your Economic Forum show on your community radio station. Today's edition is called What's Next? My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me, of course, on your community radio station. Money Matters is about money, as money doesn't matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Well, thanks for joining me today. What's going on in the world of economics and money? That's why we're here, to give you a enlightened and hopefully educational view on the world of money around us. I've been on the air since 2005 with Money Matters on a variety of community radio stations throughout the U.S. And in the news today, or in the news since I've been on, which is about 2 weeks, the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, have once again given China strong signals that the UN is likely to join the fund's basket of reserve currency known as Special Drawing Rights, SDRs. Chinese officials with knowledge of the matter told Bloomberg News weeks past. Federal Reserve, as expected, held fast on interest rates in their November meeting. And now the next meeting is December. Have we been here before? Fed say they need more data on the economy before lifting off the near 0% interest rate policy, ZIRP, that they've been on since 2009. Feds again warned, and more strongly, that December will be the time where they raise rates, but no guarantees again. What do you think? Much like the taper tantrum that the market threw years ago when the then-Fed Chief Ben Bernanke talked about slowing quantitative easing, the market sold off, with interest rate-sensitive equities showing the worst damage when the Fed threatened to raise interest rates in December. So we've seen threat after threat from the Fed to raise interest rates, but this time they sound like they may mean it. Fixed income assets, bonds, sold off, bringing some bond funds temporarily down. Utilities, preferred stocks, and some real estate investment trusts also suffered. Gold and mining stocks sold off. The underlying cross current and inference is rising interest rates will likely cause a U.S. dollar rally. Nothing's guaranteed, of course. And the U.S. dollar rally will lead to lower prices and all things priced in U.S. dollars, although assets priced in other currencies will likely rise as one currency moves against another. One would think the interest rate threat from the Fed was already baked into the price of rate-sensitive assets like fixed income assets, but investors nonetheless abandoned some issues that move with rates. Fixed income assets such as bonds, utilities, preferred stocks, and of course some real estate investment trusts. Assets sold off during a news announcement sometimes rebound later on, and only time will tell if this is the case. This time around, indeed, the Dow has climbed, as of today, November 19th, 2015, although you may be listening to this a little bit later than that. Dow sitting at 17,739 today. Don't know where we'll be listening, where we'll be at when you hear the show. If you're hearing it live noon Pacific Standard Time on Thursday, November 19th, then it is 17,739. Got beat up down to about 17,250 last week or so. And is now up about, what, 500 points or so? Up 2.8% today. With the investing world on alert to possible increasing interest rates from the Fed, the market seems sensitive and volatile at this particular point in time, although I may say in the last few days it has seemed to have calmed a tad. Nothing is cast in stone, however, and there are many exceptions to historical precedents as there are precedents. The good news is, may, possibly, be that if the Feds do raise rates, the corrections we saw or now see may lead to acceptance without incident later. So the IMF definitely has given, again, strong signals that the yuan, the Chinese currency, might join the fund's basket of reserve currencies known as special drawing rates. And as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the SDR is like the currency of currencies. Naysayers of the SDRs, special drawing rights, think them of as a higher step on the paper money ladder, while central banks think SDRs are the last bastion of monetary elixir. IMF created the SDR system in 1969 to boost global liquidity as the Bretton Woods system of fixed exchange rates unraveled. The SDR is not technically a currency, really. You won't be able to get your hands on any of it. But what it does is it gives IMF member countries who hold SDRs in their pocket the right to obtain any of the currencies in the basket, which is currently the dollar, the euro, the yen, and the pound. When national currencies consistently fall in value because of overabundance use of the printing press, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, uses the SDR to provide a backstop to nations when their individual currencies may suffer, as they did, as many did during several crises of the last decade or so. Again, you and I won't be able to get a hands on an SDR. There are only four sovereign countries and members of the IMF. But when those members get into trouble, financial trouble, they take the SDR and they can go use that and purchase other currencies. Sounds like a bit of a shell game, and it is. A game involving the last stop, we hope, in a world of currencies going bad. Think of climbing higher on the superstructure of a sinking ship. The SDR is the highest piece, at least so far. I guess if we have inflation in or deflation in the SDR, they might make another one. The old story or rumor of the red dollar. You ever heard that rumor? The United States has got red currency stashed away just in case. About $280 billion in SDRs have so far been created by the IMF and allocated to members as of September 2015. That compares with about $11.3 trillion in global reserve assets worldwide. $280 compared to $11.3 trillion, of course, is small potatoes, but the path is clear. If your currency goes bad, you simply go to the IMF and get some more of theirs. So China is pushing for inclusion in the basket of currencies, which would make it five currencies if they let the yuan in. And the IMF is seriously considering it. Global use of the Chinese currency, the yuan, has surged since the IMF rejected SDR inclusion in the last review, which is in 2010. By one measure, the currency became the fourth most used in global payments with 2.79% share in August. The yuan has surpassed the yen in currencies used, and that is according to the Interbank Financial Telecommunication, known as SWIFT. The SWIFT system keeps track of and facilitates large monetary conduits between nations. If the Chinese yuan becomes part of the SDR, central bank reserve managers and institutional investors will probably want to accumulate yuan-dominated assets that may help the Chinese economy by having more desirable and internationally accepted currency. In the grand scheme of things, and likely in the eye of the average citizen, such things are beyond everyday comprehension of you and I, of course. And the world's central banks are just fine with that. After all, if you're going to monkey with global assets, control everything money from the top down, keeping your customers, which is the rest of us, in the dark, serves a purpose well. What better way to get away with something than to have a system so convoluted and confusing to the average Joe that nobody really understands it? Anyway, the best all of us can do is hope it is all done for the common good and that no one is getting ripped off by the whole thing. Now, how many of you believe that? And more news. Months ago, and even a year back or so, I did a couple of articles and a newscast and I believe a show called Retail Wipeout. In those articles, newscasts, and shows, I detailed how online shoppers allow consumers to immediately compare product features, read actual user reviews, and finally find the absolute lowest price. I'm sure you are familiar with many of those online realtors. Online retail outfits, excuse me. Not realtors, they sell real estate. Online retailers are not confined by a particular storefront location. And with the enhanced shipping features some offer, allowing costs of transporting the product to be at the absolute lowest to you, if not free, consumers can now, of course, shop from the comfort of your own home or office and forego the hassles of driving, parking, shopping lines, and literally shop boundary free. Sometimes as far away as comparing products across the country, all in the time it takes to punch a few keystrokes. The gist of my media on Retail Wipeout was that this new way of shopping would decimate storefronts, much like the big box stores decimated your local mom-and-pop retail stores. As retailers such as Walmart and Costco put more pricing pressure on small retailers, retail storefronts went vacant. Are there many retail storefronts in your neighborhood vacant? Consumers could now buy the majority of their staples for a lower cost and buy many of them at one location, like the superstores. The result over time would be a smaller retail wipeout of the family stores, with literally thousands of small retail stores going out of business. The prognostication of my various articles, shows, and newscasts could be seen on main streets throughout the country as more and more stores went under. Now, my theory is that there is a new retail wipeout taking place, and it's coming back to haunt the same people that caused the first one. It's not really new, but it is just a continuation and enhancement of the previous wipeout. Except now the victims of this new retail wipeout will be the big box stores themselves that caused the first one. In essence, the same thing that brought us the last wipeout of the small mom-and-pop retail store, mainly the convenience and price advantage of shopping at a big superstore, now the convenience and price advantage of online shopping will put pressure on the superstores themselves, and for the same reason. With an online retailer, one of the biggest, offering free or reduced shipping and many others following suit, and the expansion of their product lines to encompass things not originally available through them, like food and clothing, just about everything else we buy, the consumer, you, will have even more reason to forego the trip to the local mall or superstore to buy even more of your stuff online, not only saving time and hassle, but saving money as well. Without travel cost, gas, and the saving time that you would by never stepping outside your door to shop, you can now even compare superstores against each other without even going there. Although many of the superstores of the world profited through largesse, Now that same largesse is heaping costs onto them that the online retailers don't have. It's cheaper to operate an order website and maintain a super shipping warehouse that can cater to consumers through large retail outlets. Large retail outlets require huge parking lots, huge buildings, buildings that cater to and are safe for live people, and requiring staffs of hundreds of employees per store. Fully automated online ordering and improvements like robotic packers help reduce the number of employees required by the online shopping complexes. And the building and maintenance costs for a live retail store set up for live people and a host of other costs are avoided by big online retailers. Maintaining a huge inventory at multiple locations at these superstars is now minimized by the onliners. And instead of floor samples taking up space, an online photo takes its place. In some cases, these big online retailers don't even have to have the item in stock. They just need to be able to get it in a reasonable amount of time. Therefore, they save money by not having to stock it, which is an immense cost. With the talk of drone delivery, you ready for that? I was always afraid the drone would come down and you'd try to grab your gift and get your finger whacked. Talk of drone delivery and even grander retailers like Alibaba, who sell anything from widgets to witch brooms. Online retailers look to threaten even the biggest of superstore companies who now must migrate their business online just to compete, and many of them are doing that as we speak. Case in point, we did see some disappointing earnings from some larger big box stores, and their forecast for future earnings did not help. I'm sure some of that may be related to economic conditions, but some of the retailers in their reports suggested online retailers were hurting them. Not all super retailer problems are likely stemming from online competition, but certainly online competitors are not helping. Among some of the reasons that a big box store cut its earnings, it stated it had incurred additional costs to establish new technologies to likely compete with online retailers. So there you go. Another retail wipeout? It's possible. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. And on the last show, we did a coverage of the Volkswagen of America on its admitted monkeying with onboard computers to mess with the emission controls. And Volkswagen announced today on Reuters that 120,000 owners of diesel cars that have violated U.S. emission standards will receive a $500 gift card and $500 toward vehicle repairs. So that's $1,000 per 120,000 diesel owners, at least here. $500 prepaid Visa gift card. So says Reuters, and a separate card good for $500 versus toward services at VW dealers and a 24-hour free roadside assistance for 3 years. Volkswagen spokesman Ginny Van said 120,000 owners have signed up to receive the gift cards, or about one quarter of the 482,000 vehicle owners covered by the emissions scandal. And check out 2 weeks ago's show, show 220, for comments on that. And, of course, our hearts goes out to the madness and the families affected by the madness of the Paris attacks. You have to really wonder what is inside a man to make it, make them do that. So President Obama has decided to break his promise on no ground troops in Syria. As of 3 weeks ago, he was initiating a movement of 50 or more American soldiers to help fight ISIS. And indeed, they will be on the ground going to Syria. I can't help but think, with the increased violence we just witnessed in Paris, the madness there, that those possibly could be increased in number. We don't know that. That is my own take on it. These 50 or so American soldiers to help fight ISIS will not be in a combat role. But Washington admits they will still be in danger. You think? Syria is not a place I would consider to go for a vacation. So here we go, and here we go again. Not the first promise a politician has broken, and it certainly won't be the last. Not that U.S. foreign wars don't work out as we sometimes expect. And do you think they work out as we always expect them to be? Wasn't it 1990 when George Bush said mission accomplished? What are we, 25 years later? Quarter of a century later? Think about that. A quarter of a century, we're still there. These advisory roles usually don't go too well, in my opinion. Just recently, the U.S. sponsored a program to help train rebels to fight ISIS and drop 50 tons of ammunition. 50 tons of ammunition. And they had a budget of about $500 million to train whoever showed up willing to fight. Laughingly, according to the Daily Reckoning, only about 60 would-be fighters showed up, falling a good deal short of the U.S. estimate of 5,500 that they expected to show. So do the math. Divide the budget of $580 million by the number of rebels, which is 60, and that works out to about $10 million per rebel trained. $10 million per rebel trained. Brian Maher of the Daily Reckoning said most of those have either been killed or run off, which leaves about five or six of the original fighters still on our side. No further mention where the 50 tons of ammo ended up. But my bet, some of it will find its way into the backs of American soldiers at some point. A gruesome thought. An interesting side note, in fiscal 2008, the year before Obama took office, real Defense Department spending was $526 billion in constant 2005 dollars, according to the Office of Management and Budget. 4 years later, in fiscal 2012, real Defense Department spending was $582 billion in constant 2005 dollars. $55 billion jump in real Defense Department spending from 08 to 12 was a 10.5% increase. It hasn't gotten any better either. Fiscal 2016 budget, the request for that budget for the military is 4% above the actual budget for fiscal year 15, which amounted to $560.4 billion, with a grand total of about $596.8 billion for what the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, calls national defense, from Slate.com. Meanwhile, The Social Security Administration takes a back seat to U.S. military spending. For the third time in 6 years, there will be no cost of living increase, COLA, as it is known by for Social Security recipients. Apparently, there is not enough inflation, according to Washington. If you know someone on Social Security that is having a hard time making ends meet, perhaps suggest they go volunteer to fight ISIS in Syria. They apparently would make a lot more money. Eh? You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cunaberti. Thank you very much for joining me today. With the Federal Reserve November meeting behind us, it has left in its wake a market that has complained bitterly by moving down almost relentlessly over a span of about a week or so back. And it has dropped, the Dow dropped about 3.5% at the time I penned this newscast to about 70,250. It is back up to 70,700 something today. Initially, the markets convulsed up, down, then headed south as stronger Fed speak indicated that the next month interest rate meeting, December, would likely yield a increase. The first such increase in interest rates in 7 years or so. Like I said, one would think so many promises by the feds to raise rates in the last few years, we thought the market would have already anticipated that in its price. Perhaps so many times the Fed threatened to raise rates and did not has left market participants doubting that they will actually raise rates. And this time around, the markets perhaps thought they would. Who really knows? But the reality is the recent market downturn had been broad-based and for the most part unforgiving to most assets. Particular markets have performed better than some, as is the usual case with broad-based declines. Pretty safe to say that most asset classes in the past 2 weeks, other than cash, had definitely been tested. It remained to be seen, at least when I wrote this newscast, whether this setback in the markets had more to run or run their course. Now with the Dow back at 17,700, perhaps that reaction is done. My opinion, it would not be a total surprise to see the Dow retest the 16,300 level it hit in August, but no one can say for sure. If it hit 16,300 or so, it would then make a somewhat of a triple bottom, and analysts look for a double or triple bottom to at least give them an indication historically that might be the bottom, may not. Energy stocks looked to stabilize earlier in the month, but softened again with the general market. The same pattern mirrored in the healthcare sector, commodities, and certain emerging markets, and all those have somewhat recovered a small bit. Global events such as the Paris attacks, talk of more QE in Europe and rising tensions in the Baltics and other areas over there may weigh heavily on investor sentiment in the coming weeks. I think with the problems in Europe, the talk of more QE will be more exuberant over there and even over here. Obvious currents and not so obvious cross currents could move markets in either direction with a high degree of volatility possible. Once again, cash positions fare better in market upsets. Maintaining value, of course. Cash never moves in value if stock and bonds fall. With more tensions overseas, energies and precious metals could attract investor attention as a flight to safety call, or could sell off in a broad-based market fall. No doubt, last week's volatility will be on the minds of investors, and the Paris attacks will likely add to the uncertainty. And who can say for sure? There's a gentleman by the name of Victor Sparandio. I find him on Fiendbear.com. Also known, writes in conjunction with an entity called the curmudgeon. I love that word, the curmudgeon. And from Victor and the curmudgeon, on Friday, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that non-farm payrolls, increased by 271,000. The strongest rate of job creation this year did take investors by surprise. Job gains in August and September were also revised up by about 12,000. The unemployment rate ticked down to 5%. That's one smidgen above the 4.9% level that the feds regard as full-time employment. That was one of the reasons the market started to rock off. We had great news on the economy, and then investors likely thought that the feds would raise rates, and so the market sold off. So we now come into an area of human existence where bad news in the market means more easy money and the markets run, and then good news in the economy may mean higher interest rates and the markets may fall. Equally important for the Fed, wages rose at the strongest clip since 2009. Average earnings rose 2.5% year over year. That's above the 1.5 to 2.3% in the past 6 years. Fed also maintains a 2% inflation rate target as one of its indicators to decide whether they will raise rates or not. They also see wages as an important indicator of the labor market. The pace of job growth in the past 3 months have averaged 187,000 new jobs per month. That, with wage growth of 2.5%, is solidly in the direction of an increase in the inflation rate, so say the feds. Again, we're reading from Victor Sparandio. Sparandio, and the curmudgeon that I find on Fiendbear.com. Friday's unemployment report numbers, which were 2 weeks back, triggered a sharp rise in interest rate bond yields. And the U.S. dollar shot up. Fed Chairwoman Janet Yellen, who replaced Ben Bernanke, strongly hinted at a December rate increase in her, by saying it's a live possibility in her comments to Congress 2 weeks back. The curmudgeon and Victor, in their newsletter, go on to say, compared with previous economic recoveries, the Fed is already way behind the curve in raising interest rates, with unemployment down to 5%. The last interest rate cycle kicked off in July of 2004 when the unemployment was higher, 5.5%. So that when they hit 5.5%, they started to raise rates. Now it's at 5%, and they have not. Majority of voices strongly suggest the feds will hike rate at the December Federal Open Market Committee meeting. Jim O'Sullivan, an economist at High Frequency Economics, said, latest report is unambiguously a very strong report. Quote, the report was so strong and broad-based that will be difficult to deter the Fed from raising rates, says Michael Goppen, chief United States economist at Barclays Bank. Until that report came out showing more jobs created and a employment rate of around 5%. Barclays had been predicting the Fed would wait until March 2016 to act, but moved that prediction up to December's meeting after the report came out. They are saying that the odds of an interest rate increase in December are 80 to 85%. Rob Garnell, an economist at ING, said it would now take a, quote, catastrophically bad jobs report for November for the Fed not to raise rates on December 16th, the date of their next meeting. And in more support of an interest rate increase coming in December, quote, only a crisis can stop the Federal Reserve, wrote John Authors in his November 6th FT column. Subscription only for that. He goes on to say, we can revert to assuming a rate rise from the Federal Reserve next month is a virtual certainty. There is no reason, says John, from the labor market for a central bank that plainly wants to raise rates from zero to stay its hand. The curmudgeon makes a note here and says, according to CME FedWatch tool, there is a now 69.8% probability of a half a point Fed rate hike at the December FOMC meeting. That's the 16th. It is my humble opinion that we will see nothing, an eighth or a quarter. That is my opinion. I do not think we will see a half. 50% of me thinks I won't see anything. There are some skeptics out there saying that the feds will not raise rates. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial, says, quote, the labor participation rate is still not up. We still have a lot of people we want to reengage. This gets to the next phase of monetary policy, which is walking the line of removing accommodation, but not so rapidly as to reduce engagement. Okay. That's a mouthful. Douglas Holtz Egan chimes in. He's an economic advisor to Republicans and former director of the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, wrote after the strong jobs report was released, this report represents real wage growth, which has been a missing ingredient. The only nit to pick was flat average weekly hours. He goes on to say, the more interesting issue is whether the strong October jobs report represents a one-time blip in the aftermath of the weak August and September readings, or whether it would continue. In November 7th note to subscribers, John Williams of ShadowStats.com wrote, current market hype that October's strong employment report locks in December rate hike is nonsense. Not only was the report not that strong, there is still more than one full month's worth of weak economic reporting ahead, including a likely much weaker November payroll employment report on December 4th, all before the December Federal Reserve FOMC meeting, from John Williams of Shadow Stats. His website offers more reasons for his opinion. He says any FOMC, that's Federal Reserve, interest rate increase resulting from this October jobs report remains more hype than reality, with meaningful weak data ahead, so says John. Except for even softer September annual growth, October payroll growth was at a 17-month low. He says unusual, unstable, and invisible shifts help to skew the payroll number. And if he looks at different versions of unemployment, they have different versions of unemployment. Although the U3 version is 5.0, he puts the U6 version at 22.8% unemployment. Whoa. Broad annual money supply growth has continued to slow, so says John. The curmudgeon conclusions on the article. In over a half a century, I've never seen a global market so obsessed with a quarter point Fed fund rate hike. I think I'd agree with him there. The first interest rate hike in over 9 years. Even though the Fed has given guidance and hints that it would raise rates gradually, every Fed comment and employment report seems to create a huge market reaction, especially the recent six trading days uninterrupted sell-off in December. The massacre of the gold futures from a high from 1190 to Friday's 2 weeks ago's close of 1088. Now it's, I think it's running around 1070. As a curmudgeon and Victor Sparandio has pointed out, a quarter point Fed funds rate hike means nothing for the real economy. They have repeated many times that such a quarter point rate increase is irrelevant. There we go. Irrelevant. Banks are flush with excess reserves, cash, from numerous rounds of quantitative easing, and they don't have to borrow money anyway. So why we think this is much ado about nothing, the markets disagree and continue to convulse. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We will be right back. And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today as we cover the world of economics around you. As everybody has to use money at some point or another. And so, as I've always said, a nuclear blast or bird flu, war won't destroy a nation, but many nations and civilization has been destroyed by economic collapse. About the only thing that really destroy a country is economic collapse. I mean, look what we did to Japan. And they came back with a vengeance. Peter Schiff, somebody who we interviewed years ago, longtime Fed critic, Peter Schiff, out on Yahoo Finance this morning, says the Fed fund futures are now pricing in a nearly 70% chance of a December rate hike. But one market pundit insists it's not going to happen. On CNBC's Fast Money, longtime Fed critic Peter Schiff said Janet Yellen is doing nothing, Janet Yellen being the Federal Reserve chief, is doing nothing more than kicking the can down the road. a term we have used on Money Matters many times. Schiff spoke after the release Wednesday of the minutes from the Fed's October meeting. The minutes signal hawkish sentiment for a rate hike. Hawkish means that is people in favor of a rate hike at the Fed October meeting. Members are signaling hawkish tendencies. According to the Fed minutes released, a rate hike has been a possibility all year long, and it hasn't happened, says Peter Schiff. The Fed statement, says Schiff, put a particular emphasis on economic data between now and the December meeting. Peter goes on to say, I don't see how that's any different than anything they've said all year round, and how people could read those minutes and jump to the conclusion that a rate hike is a lock, he does not know. Instead, Peter Schiff believes that the economy is simply suggesting it will hike, that the Fed is simply suggesting it will hike because Yellen does not want to admit that the economy is decelerating. The contrarian Peter Schiff pointed to a weak earnings from major retailers as just one indication of an economic slowdown. I think it's a dangerous game the Fed is playing, says Peter Schiff. He's a CEO of Euro-Pacific Capital. This is a bubble, not a recovery, says Schiff. For Peter Schiff, the only way a rate hike would be possible is if the market rallies back to all-time highs through the end of the year. In that case, he believes the notion of a quarter point rise in the interest rates could be feasible. However, it will be a one-and-done scenario. It's possible, says Mr. Schiff, but I think they will regret it. Despite the possibility, Schiff is convinced that Yellen will continue to imply a rate hike and that one is just around the corner while using data as an excuse not to actually do it. That again on Yahoo Finance, out today, which is Thursday, November 19th. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cunaberty. It's been a pleasure bringing you the show today. And you can find Money Matters by just contacting your local community radio station. Program directors usually will contact me. You have comments about programming on your community radio station. Program directors is the place where you should aim your inquiries. And please remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed herein are my opinions only. They do not necessarily represent those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. You have been listening to the Money Matters show number 221, entitled What's Next? My name is Mark Cunaberty, thanking you for listening. Have a great day.
Wasn't the right.
It's definitely the right. It's crazy for cruising. Yeah.